This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health.
I'm Bexy Khan.
I'm Bobby Temps.
Each Thursday we delve into a factual condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it.
With special guests, listener emails and stats you can trust, here we go.
Hey Bobby.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm okay, my back aches.
Let's get into that. What's going on?
I think it's kind of one of these inevitable things because I'm like 6'3". So I just think I'm going to have back aches, but I like...
We're both beautifully tall, by the way.
Yeah, just... I'm it's like important 5, that the 10, listeners know this.
Yeah.
tall people only need apply. I went skiing and like I've obviously just got more exercise than I normally get.
Using all those muscles
and
that never get used.
I've got one of these incredible like memory foam mattresses, which hopefully we'll get as a sponsor at some point. we'll leave the brand name up to
interpretation. Those bouncy yellow ones.
No, not them. It could be any colour that is convenient for... Yeah, so I've turned into like a mattress snob, and the one in France was not as nice.
Not
so I'm blaming that, but it's probably that I actually exercise for once.
I can sleep on anything. I can sleep anywhere.
I can, I'll just complain about it. Like, I can sleep on trains. I'll do it on purpose. I'm so smug.
Yeah.
I'll like make eye contact with a stranger and then fall asleep. Just sadistic. But yeah, I've booked myself a massage because
self-care.
I
love it.
So we'll see. We'll see if that mm-hmm. fixes it. But I'm a bit paranoid because I feel like I've not had enough massages in my life to know what the etiquette is.
Do you have to be naked?
I hope not.
What if you don't and then you are?
No, I'm going to do exactly what I'm told. There will be no surprise nakedness. I'm not sure if I need to say, oh, I've got like backache, because then they might get scared that they're gonna hurt something or it's medical.
No, they're professionals.
I hope. Yeah, I'm still not gonna mention it. I'm just gonna be like, yeah, I just stiff from work, all that stress, you know how it is. And I'll probably sound like every other bloke that goes in there.
Just push off that feminine energy that people are scared of.
Could you imagine? I just like somehow drag myself by my own back in there. Thanks, mate.
Put on a deeper voice.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I don't know, do they ask you about your day and such? I don't know if I'm ready for that. If my face is like in one of those rings and I'm looking at, you know.
I just don't want to be naked in front of a stranger.
And staring at my own hairs that have fallen on the floor. It's like it's a woman and I can't remember her name, but it sounds like something very powerful. So I feel like I'm going to get a good massage.
You'll be a new man.
Yeah. All right. So
what are we talking about
that
today?
That is far too much about that. So today's episode is about depression. So it seemed like a logical place for us to start. It's the first thing we've both been diagnosed with.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we've had arguably the most experience of. So do you want to start us off with some stats?
Yeah, I have some stats from the World Health Organization.
Ooh,
5% of the world's population have depression, which is 350 million people. Women are actually more likely to be diagnosed than men. I don't know if that's some bullshit masculinity not coming forward with your feelings, or if women are more susceptible.
Well, because, yeah, it is a bigger killer of men.
This is true.
So it may be, this is obviously our just speculation, but it could be a case that they come forward when it's more extreme, but not as commonly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, or it could be anything. It could probably be the patriarchy, yeah. Who knows?
I have some stats about young people. So Young Minds, the mental health charity, says that 1 in 10 children have a diagnosable mental health disorder, which is 3 in every classroom. And mental health problems manifest early. So what we were talking about, depression came up for us pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And by the age of 24, 75% of mental health problems will have manifested. Which is crazy, right?
That is, yeah.
To be so young. Because that's how the brain develops. Once you reach 25.
Yeah, and I think it can just influence so much else as well. Like, we know it's a big deal, we're making this podcast, but the more I hear these kind of stats, the more I'm, you know, I worry and I think what an epidemic it is, because that can influence so much. And without wanting to go into sweeping generalizations, that means people are getting their first experiences of mental health in similar times when they're getting their first, like, romantic or sexual feelings.
And they're moving away from home for the first time.
Yeah, and all of this can be so influenced. And it's so easy to fall into unhealthy habits at a young age as well.
These habits, aka symptoms, often manifest in emotional states. So Healthline lists things like irritability, which I can relate to. I'm the most easily irritated person on this world. Anxiety and restlessness, anger management issues, loss of interest. I can relate to that one. You just wake up and you don't want to do anything. Fixation on the past and thoughts of suicide. But there are also physical symptoms, which is interesting. Insomnia, fatigue, decreased appetite, weight gain, weight loss, difficulty making decisions, and aches. I used to feel it in my arms. Did you ever experience that?
Actually, I think I probably did, like when those days when you struggled to get out of bed.
Yeah, it's like this weird pain in your arms.
I don't know if I've had pain, but I've certainly had like fatigue, and there's been times when I've had to try and separate it and be like, you got enough sleep last night, you didn't go to bed late, yesterday was no busier than any other day, and try and like train myself into this is the condition, this is the illness.
Yeah, because there are often times where you won't be having a depressive episode, but you're tired.
Although one can so easily trigger the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I had, I used to have a name for it at one point, and it was like, I feel like I need to give the backstory or I'll offend somebody, because I use the word Victoria, and it's not that I have a problem with that name, but that name was the name of an ex of a friend of mine, and I really didn't get on with that person. So, and she was tricky, shall we say.
Tricky Vicky.
Tricky Vicky. So I would call it Victoria when I was just like tired and just feeling shit and just really depressed, and I can go into like a really snappy mode with it where I don't really want to speak. I just want things to happen. I'm like, I don't really want to make small talk. And I used to call that Victoria just as a kind of like signpost. Oh, I'm feeling like Victoria right now. And that's then so significant others or friends or whoever it was would then know, okay, I'm going to read this book. I'm going to leave him to it. And it generally worked out better for them.
Yeah. I'm thinking about that weight loss one, because when I was first suffering, I don't want to go into figures, that's unhealthy, but I lost a bit of weight. But in our society, that's seen as a great thing. Like, oh, you look so good, you've lost weight. And my friends would say that, and my mum would say that, and it's because I was obsessively going to the gym to manage how I was feeling. It wasn't healthy. I didn't need to lose weight.
Yeah.
And I got gratification from that. I felt good.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, oh, maybe I'm ill.
That's something I really try and stay away from in terms of, like, listening to weight. Obviously, I get a lot less of it as a guy, but I still sometimes feel like from how other people talk about weight that there's no perfect. That you're, I think there's even a Britney song about it, like that she mentions like all the paparazzi, she's too fat, no, she's too thin, is the line is something like that. And I felt like that quite a bit, where it's like I can't be in the middle. I'm either too thin, I've not really ever been fat.
That male metabolism.
But everyone is either too thin or too fat. We can't just be. And actually,
you can't just exist. Just be.
No, and actually, of course, we'll have episodes about eating disorders where we'll go into weight in detail. But actually, if you look at BMI, it's really broad. And that's another, like the NHS depression quiz thing. That's another one that I've spent a lot of time on, like finding out my BMI. And, oh, what if I was this way? And what if I was this way?
This is true. So that NHS depression self-assessment was super helpful. We talked about it last week. And it lists symptoms, but it also has a little quiz. And I thought it'd be quite helpful to talk to our listeners about the kinds of questions they ask, because I was pretty apprehensive doing it myself. I thought, is this going to trigger something? Is this going to make my day much more difficult having these mm-hmm. thoughts? So there's only 9 questions, which is super manageable. And it asks you things about your interest in doing things, feeling down, sleep patterns, energy, appetite, self-esteem, and concentration. And I think just seeing this on a list might not be so helpful, but actually ranking and recognizing when these feelings are coming up, it was an awesome first step for me.
Well, it's quite good to check in with yourself as well, because otherwise you're not necessarily asking questions like mm-hmm. that. You can very easily go into this unhealthy pattern of, why am I feeling like this?
Mm.
You know,
detaching.
Yeah.
From the critical side of yourself.
And that constant little narrative voice we all have. So, no, I found that really helpful too. And that was really my first step, because I was Googling depression symptoms. I knew I wasn't right. And I clicked on the NHS website, as that's the one that feels legit. Have a lot of faith in the NHS. And so I went from there, really. And that was the first step for me. And I took that test. And so by the time I'd taken it too many times and changed my answers loads, and then went to the GP, I knew, really.
Yeah.
And I went through this whole thing of I went into the GP and I purposely talked about not being able to sleep. Because I was like, if I talk about that loads and I'm then diagnosed with something else like insomnia, then I'm going to be apprehensive. But if I purposely try not to just rattle off the depression symptoms
yeah.
and I still get diagnosed with depression, then the quiz was right. So yeah. that's basically what happened. Yeah.
That first GP appointment, I will never forget it. It was immensely difficult, but also hugely important in my healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And I was prescribed serotonin, one of the drugs. I don't know what it was called. I never took it. I think I still have it in my wardrobe somewhere. But because my parents are doctors and we talked about it, I didn't just decide not to medicate.
Okay.
I just felt like I wanted to try therapy first. And it worked. And I had never taken medication, but I 100% respect those who do decide to take medication. I don't know. Did you ever? Is that something you chose?
No, I actually never did. I think with me, because I was diagnosing uni and I so desperately didn't want to be there, it was obvious the massive situational influence in that.
Yeah.
And so actually I was recommended that by that GP I saw that I have family counselling.
Ooh.
And I was instantly must have like recoiled in the room from that one, because I just couldn't imagine that situation
mm-hmm.
going well, of like, oh, let's all discuss issues together as a
immediately.
Family. Yeah, with someone not in the family there watching and writing notes. I didn't think that would go down well. Luckily for me, not long after, my parents agreed that the best thing was for me to leave, and their blessing was kind of what I was waiting for. So that was what was recommended to me, and I never went down the family counselling route, but I do now have a counsellor. I've not had her as long as you've had yours, but I found it so helpful. And one of my closest friends is also a counsellor, so I feel like I get a lot of free help from her. She tries not to counsel me, but
yeah,
I think once you've gone through that training process and they have to go through so many hours of client contact hours to be considered qualified, that they just become so insightful.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent where I'm very glad that we are both in counselling whilst doing this podcast, because it just means we're more aware of ourselves, we're more aware of our biases, where we have knowledge, where we don't have knowledge, and hopefully we'll continue to be more insightful.
Mm-hmm. I remember having this really aha Oprah moment in therapy when I was talking about
I love that Oprah moment.
I just couldn't understand what was going wrong.
Mm.
And I was talking to my therapist about, is it a chemical imbalance? Is that all it is? Is it as simple as that? Mm. Or is it about my history and my past, like my family? And she was obviously very wonderful in her answer. She says, it's holistic, it's human, it's everything.
Yes.
And leaving therapy that day, I felt so much more knowledgeable about myself. And it was when I was contemplating antidepressants.
Yes.
And have, like, thinking about it in that perspective was great.
Yeah. I think it's so helpful. And I think for many people, it's a great addition to clinical help as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, if you're taking medication, if you're seeing a GP or someone similar regularly, CPN, whatever it is, then I think it's really helpful to have as well, because it's additional, it's like supplementary support. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, Clara, who's going to be a guest on the podcast, she got her counsellor to go through the definition and the DSM of what her condition is.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, that was really helpful, because no one had really taken the time to explain it. They'd said, you know, this is what you have, this is what we're going to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really helpful to have that perspective, but it's more centred on you.
Yeah.
And we should say there's many different types of counselling. We're both in person centred, so that's very much
talk therapy.
Yeah, it's very much about the individual. There's no kind of predetermined scripts or techniques that they try and teach in particular situations. It's very much down to you and what you need. And that friend of mine that's a counsellor, she, I think, describes it best when she says that it's about your field, your circle of awareness. And the counsellor, through their training, can see things that you can't always see. And it's about them pulling those things in.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on a really interesting moment you were talking about, when a therapist actually takes the time to explain things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wonderful thing about the time of therapy. It's a luxury. When you go to the GP, they have 10 minutes in and out. They're so overstretched. They don't have time to explain it. I was prescribed these drugs. I didn't know what they were.
Mm.
I didn't know what they were going to do. And it's terrifying. And yes. I thought it might be worthwhile breaking down what antidepressants actually are. For although sure. We don't have experience with them ourselves. Because I think they are these hugely daunting little pills of, like, is this going to numb me? Is this going to stop me wanting to have sex? Is this going to stop me wanting to do the things I enjoy? Because that's the fear that I had.
Yeah, and I'm aware in my own experience of people that do take depression medication or similar mental health medication. That's one of the key reasons they come off it. Mm. My aunt, who's a GP, says the one that she sees people go off most commonly is those with bipolar disorder. Because it does have that numbing effect. It takes out a lot of the lows and the highs and makes you more stable. Doesn't necessarily work for everyone, but that's the idea of it. It works for many people. But you can start missing that, because if you're used to having the highs some of the time, you can miss that, or you can just miss feeling a little less numb.
Mm.
And I think that's similar with depression, yeah. From what I know.
Yeah. So our favourite website, mind.com, describes antidepressants as working by boosting or prolonging activity of particular brain chemicals, including neurotransmitters. So, in essence, I don't understand what that means, but it's a psychotic drug.
Yeah, so it deals with the mind. So neurotransmitters, to my understanding, are like little synapses, little signal senders and receivers in your brain that send electricity around that forms the content of everything that's out there. So, you know, you have conditions like Parkinson's, where those start to break down and the connections stop happening and people forget things. And so they're so vital.
Mm-hmm.
And drugs are used for many conditions, not just mental health, to change the way those transmitters work and what they transmit and what they don't.
So Mind actually said, while there is an element of success with these drugs and they may lift your mood, there is yet no scientific evidence that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance that can be corrected by antidepressants, which I found fascinating because the first response of my GP was to put me on medication that may not do anything.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think is really difficult with mental illness, and it's only made worse by the stigma around it, because there's so much to it. You know, we've only mentioned one type of counselling. There's so many, and indeed there's so many medications you can be recommended. There's so many different things your GP could say. And I think a lot of that responsibility can be put onto the patient.
To research and understand.
Yes, yeah. And I don't have a solution for that because there's just so much out there. But maybe if it was something that was more actively taught in schools, for example, then you'd have a bit more insight. And then if you came to a point in your life when you thought, I need to fix this, or I need counselling, for example, then you have a bit more context.
And I think counselling is such a luxury. We're so privileged to be able to access it when we need it, because wait lists for NHS treatment are extensive. And often drugs may be seen as a way of bridging the time between acknowledging the problem and actually getting access to counselling.
And we'll definitely have soon some GPs or other medical professionals on who we can ask those in-depth questions to. But no, I agree, because as far as I know, there isn't a drugs waiting list. I've certainly never known of one.
And psychiatry appointments are seen there for... Obviously, it's an important aspect, but not something that everybody can access. And it's important.
For sure.
So something I found very interesting was when I was beginning to understand the relationship between my body and my mind was when I came off the hormonal contraceptive pill about a year and a half ago.
And just to confirm, that's what people refer to as the pill.
The pill, yeah. And I'd been on it from the age of 16, so quite a long time. And as soon as I stopped taking it, about a month in, I felt this weight was just gone and my mind was clearer. I didn't get as distressed as often, and my whole energy was just shot up. And I'd been reading about it a lot online, and I'd actually been told by one of my first therapists that I should consider coming off it. And I went to my GP and I asked them, and she said that my risk of getting pregnant was more important, and I needed that should be the priority.
Okay.
And so I just forgot about it, didn't take any notice of it, and then I started reading more about it online. And I found that there was actually a study by the University of Copenhagen recently that found that with the 1 million women they tracked from the age of 15 to 34 for 13 years, that there was a 23% increase in the likelihood of being diagnosed with depression on the combined oral contraceptive. And they found that with paraestrogen-only pills, there was a 34% more likely risk of getting depression, which in itself is too high and something that should be talked about more. But the most shocking finding was that with teenage girls, there was an 80% increase. And this is a university study. This isn't some dodgy behind-the-scenes test.
You'd hope it's not someone coming in with a vendetta.
Yeah, and this is even higher with the hormonal coil. And I was never told this when I went on the pill. I was never told of the risk. And it really upset me to think that I'd lost time. I'd lost my teenage years feeling depressed because I was daily taking a dose of a hormone that was making my symptoms worse.
Although, let's be clear, that's, you know, that itself isn't binary. So you wouldn't have been without the depression.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
But it certainly made things worse for you.
Yeah, for me. It may not be the same for other women.
Yeah.
And I can only speak to my own experience, but that was a turning point in my healing.
And to put that in context from a male perspective, there's recently been a drug developed that people refer to as the pill for men. And so that's a contraception that's drug-based that men can take, and it works in a similar way, and it works with hormones. And as far as I've read up on it, clinical trials have stopped on that because men were having side effects, and the side effects were to do with hormonal imbalances, mood swings, feeling depressed, symptoms that are side effects of most female contraception and that women have been putting up with as long as we've had those forms of contraception. So it's something really universal. It's certainly not a female thing. Anytime you're interfering with the body's hormones, it's going to have effects in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's across drugs in general. That's what side effects are ultimately. Mm-hmm. Is that you're interfering with features of the body that are supposed to be self-regulating.
Yeah, yeah. And it came as no surprise to a lot of women, I'm sure, because prenatal, postnatal depression is a huge, huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's due to hormones.
Yeah.
And the connection is evident.
For sure. And it's very common, and it's a lot more common than people realise. We put up on our Instagram account a quote by Adele talking about her postpartum depression. So it's something that is so common, and it's not really widely reported.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know she'd ever suffered from it. I only knew by looking.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do want to follow us on Instagram, that's at Mental Podcast. There we're going to really focus on quotes, just so you can see how common so many mental illnesses are and how many names you recognise have opened up about that.
And how you can thrive.
For sure.
Depression can often make you feel like you're a failure or you won't achieve, or the pressure to achieve is contributing to it. And it really helps me to look at celebrities who have experience with it, because it's like, oh, my life isn't going to be too bad. Like, J.K. Rowling had depression. She did okay.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something that I think is a big part of my journey, is trying to move to that place of not just being successful and doing well despite mental illness, but actually trying to channel it in a way that I'm doing well in part because of it, because mm-hmm. that's a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm managing that part of me well, and therefore I'm doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really grateful for the empathy it's taught me and being able to connect to other people on a level that I never was able to before.
Yeah, and that's something I still experience now, is that people can really shy away from you talking about mental illness. They can see it as incompatible for whatever stereotypes they have with who you are. So people that consider me, this is my personal experience only, but people that consider me successful that I know seem to be less likely to accept that I have depression and that that's something I deal with all the time. And it seems to be because they see those things as somehow incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not. And I don't know, maybe that's something that people in the media think as well, because it's not something that seems to be brought up. You know, I've watched so many, you know, documentaries or read autobiographies of notable people, and that's generally not brought in unless they bring it in themselves.
Mm.
I've never once heard, an interviewer say, oh, so you're a musician. Loads of musicians I've interviewed have struggled with this. Have you struggled with this? I've never known it happen. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily the right approach either.
Yeah, I think that's part of the stigma, is people don't know how to bring it up. How do you ask a new friend, have you ever felt depressed? It's very easy to start talking about yourself. And that's also a very vulnerable thing to do, like opening up.
Yeah, but I think that maybe that is the best strategy we can think of right now. Like, it reminds me of an example with one of my grandmas. She used to, when she wanted to know someone's age, she'd say, oh, so I'm such and such an age.
Yeah.
And then she'd just leave a silence, and then they feel obligated to disclose their age.
Yeah.
But they felt more comfortable doing so because it's not
Mm-hmm.
It's not a direct question, and yeah. they've got some information first. It sort of levels the playing yeah. field.
And that's the main takeaway I've had from my whole mental journey is talking, being open, letting people in.
Mm.
That's how you heal, is opening yourself up, which is the hardest thing to do sometimes when all you want is to sit in your room and binge Friends and not talk to anybody. But that's my main advice.
Yeah, I feel like Netflix, they're doing very well on people not wanting to leave their rooms.
Yeah, and I have a little quote.
Oh, good.
To end off.
Okay.
It's from Jasmine Walker and her beautiful book, My Heart and Other Black Holes, which is really... I don't know why I keep laughing. I think because it touches me and then I laugh.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to go with that.
The quote is as follows. I wonder if that's how darkness wins, by convincing us to trap it inside ourselves instead of emptying it out. I don't want it to win.
Oh, I love that.
You like it?
Great. Yeah, more quotes like that, please.
Send me quotes. I love quotes.
No, because if I find a good quote, it's going on the Instagram. That's how this works.
This is true. Also, Tumblr is awesome. Follow us on Tumblr.
Yes, Bexy is in charge of Tumblr.
I live in 2011.
I do not understand it. It baffles me. It looks very pretty, but I don't know how it works. So, yes.
Yeah, mental podcast.
So, something we thought to discuss a little bit on here as well is what's worked for us and what our experience has been in terms of, like, coping strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start off?
Yeah, I'd say for me, this is very stereotypical, but yoga has been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I do it 3 times a week now.
And every time I promise to start doing it with her.
And it helps. I feel stronger in my body. I feel stronger in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I am able to go somewhere and just relax.
It'd be good for my back.
Yeah. And so often relaxing is something we do at home.
Yes.
But it's awesome to be able to go somewhere external, have a structure, like I have the same class every week, and know that I'm going to feel good at the end of it.
Mm.
It's really great.
Yeah, that is. And it reminds me of something that I do. Like, I was just talking off air about the fact that I have almost like a list of things I prescribe myself now. So one of them is just getting out of the house. So it can seem very appealing to just be like, oh, I actually don't need to go anywhere today. I'm just going to stay at home. And
those days can be great sometimes.
They can be great, but the kind of person I am,
yeah.
I love productivity 24/7. My idea of a day off is like 50% work. but there comes a point often where I get to a certain time in the day and I'm just feeling very isolated and withdrawn. And I can become a bit sort of numb and like almost third person to my own life. Like, oh, here you are. You knew that you had time to exit that Netflix episode, but you just let it scroll to the next one. Have you noticed they've changed that to like 5 seconds? I swear it was like 15 seconds. And yeah. That's 5 seconds to the next episode. They got me.
You don't have to move.
They got me good. Yeah, it's so good. Do you ever get it where it asks you if you're still there?
Yes, of course. Obviously, where else would I be?
I love it. It's like, what have they got to lose? Like, yeah. They're still getting viewers. Like,
sometimes I fall asleep watching Netflix, and it just keeps going.
Maybe that's
all night.
It. That's too mad. But yeah, so that's something I prescribe myself. I'll just go out, even if it's just to a coffee shop, even if it's just a walk around where I live with some music or another podcast, whatever it is. Sometimes I just need to.
Music is all really helps me.
Mm.
It affects my mood. If I need to feel sad, I'll listen to one of my crying songs and just yeah. feel what I need to feel. And if I want to jump around...
Sometimes you need to get that out. My one is really niche. I watch, like, not even trailers, snippets of movies where that part made me cry. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. There was a specific... Oh, you know the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel? I think that's its correct title. That was the first movie I ever cried in, and ever since it's just been waterworks.
I cry very easily.
So now if I feel like I want to, you know, get some tears, get some emotion out of my system, I will go to specific movie snippets that made me cry before.
It's cathartic.
Also the Guinness adverts. I don't know if it's an Irish thing, but there's some emotional Guinness adverts. There's one guy that comes home to his mum from the war. Like, it gets me every time. But yeah, so definitely. But no, I have like a playlist for everything, and I have like empowerment music, and I have like, yeah, sometimes I have a dance around the flat. I have tracks that I sing along with a friend of mine too.
And that's the incredible thing about films. Is there an artwork that really makes you feel something? And it's
incredible. Yeah, they're such a capsule.
Yeah, and you can say, I want to feel this. Like, if I'm thinking about my ex, there's a specific movie, and it's like...
I'm not going to insult him by guessing what movie.
No, it's let's not.
Yes.
It's a very specific moment in the movie, and I'll just feel what I need to feel.
Mm.
And that's art. I think it's art.
For sure. For sure, because they're connecting with you. They're distilling down human experience into two-ish hours. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. Particularly when you look at the back end of it. You know, you're watching 2 hours and it takes them months to put together.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, really. So, no, definitely music, films. Something I use quite a lot, and I mentioned before, how this is something I learned to use when I was first living away from home, is just prescribing myself sleep. There'd just be times when I didn't know if it was depression, or I didn't know if it was exhaustion, or just being around too many people. But sometimes I just needed to be like, look, it's 6 p.m. I don't care, I'm going to sleep. And it will all feel better in the morning.
And those basic things.
Yeah. And I think I'm lucky in the fact that because I work so many hours in the week now, I can pretty much drop asleep like that. I like almost always need it. So obviously these are things that work for us. If you have insomnia, sleep is something that you know you want and can have.
I also found cooking really healing. Mm-hmm. The act of going to the shop, buying nice ingredients, preparing something just for me felt very self-care driven.
For sure.
Yeah.
I do that, except mine are always cakes. So, but yeah, baking would be one of mine.
Yeah.
Any others? But yoga is good. Yoga, you know, and sport great. In general is good.
Mm.
You know, we talked before about hormones.
Yeah.
You know, it's a endorphins. Great way to get the endorphins up, to balance out the hormones.
I'm really keen to start running. That's my new goal.
Okay.
I want to wake up early and I want to go for runs. And maybe I'm putting too much pressure on myself and I'm getting down about not achieving it. But I guess
you'll have to see.
We'll see. I'll keep you updated if I ever wake up early enough to go on a run.
Yeah, that would not appeal to me. I don't know. Something about running, it's just kind of like slamming your joints against the ground. I'm not convinced it's healthy at all.
You're running wrong.
I don't know. I think I just would end up with knee trouble. Am I a cynic? Grand. Have we got any others to mention? I feel like I do more than just sleep and eat and bake. Oh, friends.
Call your friends.
Definitely. I have one friend in particular that I have a habit of calling him in the middle of the night when I feel really bad.
Yeah.
And he's so sweet about it with his little groggy voice. And then we'll get kind of 10 minutes into whatever rant or rambling I'm having. And then he'll be like, okay, so how are you feeling now? And I'll be like, oh, a bit better. Do you want to go to sleep? And I'll be like, okay, I'll let you go. Thank you so much. Bye.
Yeah. That's something I've learned to do recently, because I was in a codependent relationship. Mm-hmm. I would just call my partner. And that was not healthy. There was too much strain on both of us. And I wasn't opening myself up to other people, which is a habit I'm now developing, even with my baby sister.
Mm-hmm.
She's my go-to now, but 6 months ago, I never told her when I was down.
It's really important. I remember when I was a teenager, I would have this habit of just going through my phone and just calling people until someone picked up. And that worked quite well for me because it meant I talked to different people each time.
Yeah.
So no, that's, you know, again, it's talking to people about it. It's so helpful.
And you get help in different ways from different people. Not everyone can give you everything you need in that exact moment. But if you're patient and you reach out to enough people, that's when you really start to feel supported. It's a network. Support network, my therapist's favourite word.
Yeah, it's really important. And again, to mention therapy, it's one of the things that you can get better at, therapy or no therapy. Understanding yourself better is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all tactics that we've learned from putting up with ourselves.
Yeah.
But we differ quite a lot as well, because I'm a lot more extroverted than you are. You're more of an introvert. And so for me, I can feel really low just because I've not had stimulation of talking to people.
Mm-hmm. But I'll feel low after being around people.
Yeah, so if the introvert-extrovert thing isn't something you're familiar with, basically that's to do with where you get your energy. So for me, I get energized when I'm around a group of people and when I'm talking and they're talking and I'm in a social setting. Whereas if you're an introvert, that's more likely to exhaust you and actually spending time with a book or just on your own
recharge.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the odd thing, because for me, that's recharging. Mm-hmm. And I still need alone time too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about tailoring that to what you need. Because sometimes I get that. Sometimes I want to cancel plans with someone and I tell myself that that's not who I am. And actually, as much as I can go into, let's say, a meal with someone and think, I feel like shit, I'm just going to spend all of that time nammering on about that and it's going to be really awful for everyone, it actually doesn't happen.
Yeah.
We just talk about normal stuff and it's a distraction from all of that, and then I go home and usually I feel better.
And don't hesitate to talk about yourself. I used to have this bizarre conviction.
I don't think that's my problem.
No, not yet. For me, I had this conviction that I talked about myself too much and nobody wanted to hear.
Mm.
Which was when I was in my darkest depression little moment of nobody wants to know. And that voice isn't true. That voice is never true. There's always people who want to hear.
Yeah, that's actually one more thing we'll say, because now we're coming out of time. But in terms of that voice, that narrative you get in your head, I think it actually took me a while to realise that everyone had that.
Mm.
You know, I knew instinctively that we all had it, but I didn't know that everyone else's was negative too.
Yeah.
And was so self-critical. And I remember we having an assembly about it at school, and I thought that was so brilliant that they talked about that, because it's so universal.
Cool.
But it was, you know, and I remember whoever the teacher was saying, you know how you can check that you're in control of that voice? Try getting it to say something in someone else's voice. You know, think of a voice you hear all the time, like a family member or a friend, or you know, someone from Family Guy. And, you know, put that voice on and you can do it, and you can make the voice sound different. And so that's a way of reminding yourself that you're in control of it. And another tactic I've learned since then is from an incredible motivational speaker called Lisa Nichols, who I'm obsessed with. And she developed something for when she was going on stage. And she'd have the negative self-talk and it'd be telling her that she was going to fail. And the voice is very creative. I mean, I wish I could, you know, use that for good, because it will tell you a million ways you're going to fuck up. It won't tell you how you're going to do well.
Yeah.
Doesn't have so many of those ideas. But she would have all of that going on. And nobody knew that, because she came on stage and she seemed so confident and so inspiring. But she still has that now. And one of her tactics is she'll just tap like one side of her head and then the other, or the inside of one palm and then the other. And she imagines that one's a pause button for the negative voice and one's a play button for the positive one. And it seems kind of imaginary or artificial, but actually, if you practice it, it really does work. Something about using that physical prompt can create a habit in your mind.
Mm-hmm. I also liked mantras, saying things to yourself without wanting to.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm great at those. And that's something I find a lot work-wise, that it's often the things that are most important that are the most daunting. You know, very few people aren't nervous before an interview, for example. Mm-hmm. But the interviews are important. You don't get any job without the interview, or not most of them. So it's, mantras can be great. Yeah.
I would just say, it's going to be okay, again and again. And you'll believe it eventually. If you say it to yourself enough, if you look in the mirror and you say it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because you believe the opposite. Your whole body feels the opposite.
But again, on the subject of mantras, I think it's important to be careful of the language as well.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy for people to be like, don't mess this up.
Mm.
And then what are you thinking about messing it up?
That's the critical element you're using.
So even if it's a positive message, but you're using those negative words, so you're actually a lot better off going, I'm going to get this interview. I'm qualified. I'm going to get it. This is the right job for me. Whatever it is, repeat these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, whether you believe it or not, that's where your focus is. Your mind can only entertain so many words at once.
Yeah.
In psychology, they refer to it as the phonological loop.
We aren't as smart as we think we are.
Mm.
We can trick ourselves.
Yeah. So that's something, you know, that's why you can listen to two people talk at the same time and actually understand them. So you can't listen to the negative voice if you're playing something else. Okay, I think we're out of time. Thank you. So now it's time for our social media account to make your social media more healthy. My recommendation this week is on Instagram. The account is Taste of Streep, all one word. And it's an account where basically Meryl Streep is edited into various foods, and it's completely ridiculous and I really love it. A friend recommended it to me. I love Meryl Streep, and seeing her as a baby bow, it just makes my day. So yeah, that's my recommendation. Thank you for listening, and if you want to suggest topics to cover or any questions, email over mentalpodcast@icloud.com.
All emails are anonymous by default. Visit mentalpodcast.co.uk for a list of our recommended resources. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling and other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by Next Sky. Links in the description.
Speak to you next Thursday. And remember, you are enough.